Yes, sir.
I did it this time. When's the last time you guys listened to this full song?
It's been years.
I really think because we can use this, we should. You guys should like heavy metal cover it. Like you two should.
No, so
I could totally
you
make
can
that
definitely
happen.
Make it hardcore.
There's two options here.
Harmonizing guitars.
No, so here, there's two options. There's the heavy metal route, which you were just talking about. But there's also, and this is what I want to do more than anything. And Harrison, if you want to, birthday, Christmas, whatever, this would be the best gift anyone has ever given me, would be a traditional, like, Hillsong style worship cover of this song. Like, can you just try to picture that in your head? Like, just G, C, A, D chords. You have, like, the worship leader in, like, skinny jeans going, like, come on, church! He goes, God's backhand. Whop! Like, it would be, that would be funnier to me than the metal version.
Nah, I still say metal. Don't toss that thing back to me.
We can make it happen.
We've been tossing it around this whole time.
Tossing the fish. He almost knocked over your water. My carpet has seen enough water already, okay?
Water.
This carpet hasn't.
Well,
the previous
this
carpet
room's
did.
Carpet has been flooded enough times already, okay?
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Sorry We Tried.
Hey
As
there.
Always, what?
I said hey there.
Why?
You said hi. Hello. You said hello.
Hello.
I'm not talking to you.
Hi.
Okay,
good to see
so
you.
I'm talking to the WWE Universe right now, the fans. Well, should we say SWT Universe? Is that what we should call it? Our listeners? The SWT Universe.
Sounds even worse.
And that's the bottom line. Because Robathan.
You think if Stone Cold, so. You think if Stone Cold tried to grow out hair now, what do you think it would look like? Where do you think his hairline is, if you had to guess?
The back of his head?
Because he bone shaves that thing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it is like
there's
no
stubble,
hair.
There's
nothing.
Yeah, he
I don't
definitely
think he
takes a razor to
I think
that
he had
every
a
day.
Surgical, he had like a surgical operation to remove all of the hair follicles
or he
from
just,
his head.
He may get his hair waxed.
Oh, he's getting his
that
hair
would
waxed.
Hurt so bad.
That, yes, dude. That oh,
forget
man.
That.
Have you ever had anything waxed?
No.
Have you ever had anything
no.
waxed? Well, no, I when
I'm
I used to go to,
to.
No, I used to go to a hair salon where they would wax my mustache sometimes, just because I used to.
Oh,
it, it's
like
just
line
easier
it up.
Than shaving. Well, it, no, it's also just easier than shaving. I wanted to keep
oh,
it.
I gotcha.
Clean for a while.
Yeah.
But I, dude. Oh man, it hurt. I was like, I can't imagine doing this on any other part of my body. I mean, it was bad.
Especially more
yikes.
Sensitive parts.
Yeah.
Of your body,
yes.
Perhaps.
Like it's like McDonald's. Like if you put McDonald's buffalo sauce like all over your lips, and then you set it on fire, that's exactly what it would feel like.
Oh,
McDonald's
did they do
sauce
the burn?
Inflammable?
No, they didn't do the burn.
Have
but
you seen
it,
that?
No, I didn't know you could.
So okay, occasionally YouTube.
I was doing the intro.
Occasionally YouTube or Instagram or whatever will just randomly throw in a series of videos where it's like. Costa Ricans or Colombians or
it's all, yeah,
Thai
no,
people
no, I get
or
what
whatever
you're
doing
uh-huh.
like those crazy cool haircuts and uh-huh. stuff. But then they'll do some random thing where they'll like take some kind of foam and put it all over their face
and
then just
burn
like
it?
Burn off all the,
my God.
The facial hair. You're like, what the heck?
That's one way to do
it's
it.
It's the craziest stuff
that's
I've
one
ever
way
seen.
To do it, yeah.
Well, hello and welcome to Sorry We Tried.
Hi.
As always, my
you?
Name is... Or as always, I'm not your host, but I am the one who talks first. My name is Spencer. On the ones and twos, as always, the Lizard King here
is
about.
What is up?
I did
try
it again.
Take two.
Clean read.
Take two.
As
action.
It's okay. We can give up on the intro.
On the ones and twos, as always, the Lizard King, Harrison.
Me.
Ooh, don't. No.
No, why?
No.
Why?
What's up, y'all? You can just cut that.
I'll bleep it.
You think Hitler faked his German accent? Secretly a Southern man? You sound like Luke Brown.
That would be a twist.
What's up, y'all?
It's going to be even better once I bleep what Harrison said before.
Like,
so that's
I love
make...
that country music.
What you just said is going to make no sense after I bleep whatever Harrison just said. And reigning proudly from the third chair, the artist formerly known as Robathan.
I don't know if it's reigning proudly anymore, but I am reigning.
It's always raining.
Yeah, it's always raining in Philadelphia.
Would it be better if you had like a Paul Heyman every time I said that to like
somebody like introduced lift up your belt. Oh yeah, that too.
My name is Robathan.
I just mean like I think I've disrespected myself so much on this show that it's like there's no proudly rating anymore.
Especially with the last episode that we unfortunately birthed into the world that is never going to see the light of the day.
Unless it does.
If it does, it's going to be the most heavily edited episode we've ever done.
I don't know. I feel like there's been at least one other.
But to go back to your band conversation that we started off this episode with, I was thinking, because you sent a screenshot yesterday or the day before yesterday at some point of the new soundtrack for WWE 2K24.
Oh, yeah. Awful.
And on the track list, I'm going to pull this up right now. On the track list.
Isn't it just their walkout
this
music?
This is curated by Post Malone. They made a big deal about this. On the track list, there is a song called Big Rigs by the band Pigs, 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 Pigs.
What?
There
That's
it is.
Not real. That can't be real.
That is, again, Pigs, 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 Pigs.
Of Not course. To be mistaken with pigs, 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 pigs.
Of course, Post Malone would pick
seven,
that.
The seven uses of the word pigs are very necessary there. Yeah, okay.
Totally. Have you ever thought about what your walkout song would be?
No. Probably
Take On Me by Aha.
That's too good of a song for me.
It's probably
the one I played for you guys pre-recording.
Big.
Three of them.
Pigs, pigs, pigs.
No, not that.
Mom would be Big Rick.
Three.
Pigs, 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 pigs.
At first I thought that one was the name of the song, and then when I saw the rest of the chart, I was like, oh no, I was like, that's the name of the band.
Oh, man.
It'd be even weirder if that was the name of the song. But that made me think about our very close, I don't know how to word this, the time that we almost started a band. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah. The Neon Worms.
Yep. The Neon Worms. So I was walking around in TJ Maxx. TJ Maxx reference.
sitting.
And they have like all the random crap at like the counter, right? And I saw a bag of gummy worms. And it said on the packaging, Neon Worms. And I sent that to Harrison and then a couple of our friends that we knew. I think this is probably like junior year of high school, maybe.
Probably.
And this is before Robbie entered the picture at all.
You ever get the feeling something sinister is going on at TJ Maxx? Like they're... I'm sorry. I got a little distracted. But is it not creepy when you guys walk in TJ Maxx? Like, I feel like TJ Maxx specifically has got this weird air to it. Like, I walk into TJ Maxx and I'm like, this makes me uncomfortable.
You ever walk into Marshalls and feel the same way?
Kind of. They're like the same type of feeling.
It's the same store.
Yeah.
It's basically the same store.
TJ Maxx, Marshalls, and there's one more.
Home Goods.
They're all owned by the same people.
Is it Home? I think it's Home Goods. It's Home Goods. Home Goods is separate, right? TJ Maxx and Home Goods. And then, yeah.
I don't know. Shout out to Home Goods. That's where I got our current set of glasses that we use in our house right now.
I'm not gonna shout out.
I never
out
wear
the,
glasses.
Something's going on in there. They built the top at like a burial ground or something.
I guess there is a very weird vibe in the TJ Maxx.
Yeah, that's not
hometown.
Even a joke. I mean, like every time I've ever walked into
like
TJ Maxx, I've
situation.
Been like, something is off here. Someone is either about to die or has just died. I'm not sure which one.
But
anyway, I didn't mean to get you so far
fine.
Off track.
That's an interesting thought that
it's
really come to me before. But I took a picture and sent that in like a group chat with us and some of our music friends, or friends that played music. We were all worship guitarists, so none of us really, most of us did not actually know anything about music. Harrison's the only one who really did, I would say. But we sent that, and I was like, this is a great band name. And for months, we talked big about how we were going to start a band, how we were going to perform live at a restaurant in town that did open mics. This is going to be real. We talked about it. We came up with a set list. But the thing that killed us, and I will never forgive Harrison for this, the thing that killed us was that we realized like 2 months in, we didn't know who the lead singer was going to be.
We could have just been an instrumental band.
That's not fun.
Could nobody sing?
No. So
one of them could.
we were like, who's going to be the lead singer? And we started talking about it. I was like, heck no, y'all don't want me singing. And a couple of other dudes were like, yeah, I don't want to sing either. Harrison at the time was not only a worship guitarist, but was singing to lead worship. So we assumed that Harrison would do the job, you know, the job that somebody had to do to be the lead singer of our band, the Neon Worms. And he said, no. Would you like to guess what happened to our band after that?
Fast and Furious split up style?
Yes. We never went anywhere after that. And that was the closest I've ever been to being in a band.
So it's
and
all your fault.
It's all Harrison's fault. Can you imagine it would have been like, had we, even if we just did one show, being able to say, I was part of a band in high school called the Neon Worms. Can you imagine that life that we could have been living right now? Even better if our terrible band, the Neon Worms, made it big.
Okay. If you guys had one show, right, and say you had like a set list of like, then they let you do four songs, what would be the four songs that you two would collectively pick to play?
That's your hard question.
Let's go two. What are the two songs?
Think. The secret is I don't actually know how to play guitar.
So Wonderwall. Okay, what about you?
After all, I think you'd have to go something classic, something like high energy. Right, the one song I ever
by Outkast.
The one song I ever really learned how to play on guitar was "Hurt" by Johnny Cash, but that is not high energy. Lion Sleeps Tonight.
Imagining Harrison singing "Hurt" by Johnny Cash is so fun. I don't know. It's not that I don't think you could do it. Just you sitting there with the spotlight on you.
I guess my real answer here would be the only other song I ever learned how to play guitar, which is "The Lion Sleeps Tonight."
Okay.
That would be fun. I feel like that'd be a crowd pleaser.
Fair.
Harrison, what would your song?
"Summer 09 and Sitting."
Not TJ Maxx.
Let's just fill it in and say "All Star" by Smash Mouth.
That'd be good. You don't have to be a good vocalist to sing "All Star."
Touche.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was gonna trash Smash Mouth, but didn't he just die?
I think
I'm gonna back out on that one. I'm gonna opt out.
Back it up.
You probably have to. I mean, if junior year in high school, we would have probably done. Probably like "Hallelujah" or something pretentious like that.
We definitely would have done
Tequila. Is that what you're saying?
We would have done Tequila. We would have done Bohemian Rhapsody, and we would have done Africa for sure.
Yeah, us in high school as homeschoolers, not knowing real music, that would probably be the songs
that
we picked up.
Colt 45 by Afro Man.
What about the country remix? Have you ever heard that?
There's a country remix,
dude. It actually slaps so hard.
We're so far away from our episode topic right now.
We'll table this. Yeah.
I will show you after.
Yes, please.
It's fantastic.
Okay.
I will say though,
so good.
If I was to start a band now, obviously what I would do is our debut song that we would do on this open mic night would be to bring you out, Robbie, for one song only, and that is to rap the entirety of "Lose Yourself" by Eminem.
Yes. I'd do it. Yeah, I'd do that.
Yes.
I would do that. Yeah.
Then you actually could be,
I would be
the
your
artist
opener.
Formerly
I've,
known
I've
as Robinson.
I've seen this multiple times. Robbie will throw his hood over his eyes and just go fully into it. And there was one time he was in the flow, was just rapping perfectly, and he started wheezing and coughing, and then he was like, "Turn it off, I can't."
Yeah, so I did.
His exact words were, "I'm going to throw up if I keep going."
Throw up. I love the fact that you chose to stop yourself, even though you clearly could have kept going.
Yeah, because I'd rather not tarnish what was a part. It's like when you miss a note in Guitar Hero, you start over and do it again, right? Yeah. You know, yeah.
No, that's fair.
But I could, you guys get famous, I could just be your opener everywhere, and I would just perform that song
every time, just to get everyone hyped.
Would we play the instrumental part of that on acoustic guitars?
Yes, you would have to, yeah.
Or would we just do it in complete silence?
Or just like, give me the stage, you guys.
Spotlight.
Go, yeah, just.
just me.
You have earbuds in.
Straight
a cappella.
Yes, but nobody can hear it.
Else
yes.
can hear it.
Just straight a cappella.
Okay, this we do need to move on to our episode topic today, but this is... I might have even told the story on the podcast before, but it's one of my favorite stories of all time. When we were in our Christian homeschool tutorial, Harrison and I were, they did a talent show every year. And there was this guy who we went to high school with that at one point was trying to make his name as like a Christian rapper.
Yeah.
And all of the, like the ladies in charge... Yes, that's the twist. But all of the ladies in charge of this homeschool tutorial thought it was the most amazing thing ever. They were going like, "Have you listened to?" I almost said his name. "Have you listened to this guy's music?" And it wasn't very good music. But what he did was at the talent show. You know how like for mid 2010s Christian music, what they would do was they would have the headliner musician going out and sing like their generic K-Love Christian song, and then like halfway through they would have like a rap for like 30 seconds maybe.
That was the 2010s wrapped up into one formula pretty much.
Yeah.
What this guy did at the talent show, and he
Flo Rida
performed twice at the talent show. He and his brother did a cover of the song from The Greatest Showman, the Hugh Jackman and Zac Efron song.
Yeah.
They did a cover of that, and then he came out again. And what he did was he played, like I think it might have even been a Toby Mac song, and he had it playing as the track in the background. The full 2 minutes, 2.5 minute song, just standing there on the stage. And then when the 20 second rap part came on, he had the track edited to where there was dead silence. So he would go in, rap that 20 seconds.
That's hilarious.
And then just went right back to standing there.
That is hilarious. Dude, the first 2 minutes had to be so awkward. Just sitting there. But that's insane.
Well, and props to that guy. He had more confidence than I will ever have in my life because
he
was grooving.
He tried to sell it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he just stood there.
Thank you, Toby Mac, for the.
Straight up.
What's even better is his brother also double performed that day. And he did one of the worst comedy skits I've ever seen in my entire life. Do you remember this? It was like, and I hate to steal this guy's bit. Maybe he's an SNL writer but
can't be much worse.
It was I can't remember the specifics of it, but he was like a test subject, and they were rating how painful things were, and he was pretending to get hit with things. And the climax of this bit was that his brother or somebody was chasing him around the stage with a frying pan. And that was it.
It was the weirdest thing.
That guy also tried to fight me. Do you remember that in sophomore year?
Remember
this guy?
He called you Hitler?
He called me...
Wow, where's this coming full circle?
God, I wish that I could remember the exact thing he said.
Oh, no, he said you were a Nazi, specifically
Hitler circa 1944, I think is what he said. So this guy...
Is it a different kind of, like, diss if you go Hitler circa 1930-something? Different insults.
We are so far away from Miyamoto Musashi. I'm so sorry if anybody clicked on this episode to hear about some cool samurai stuff.
You were Hitler, but before he was kicked out of art school.
But
pre-genocide Hitler.
I'll make this really, really short, but I can't not tell this story now that I'm thinking about this guy. I haven't thought about him in years. This guy was younger than us by a couple of years. Like, I think he was in eighth grade, maybe, or maybe he was a freshman. I don't remember.
Do I know this guy?
No, you would not. You would. There's
but
no
he
chance.
Was about yay tall.
What if I did somehow know this guy?
Did you ever hear? What's his name?
The Asian?
No.
Okay, then no.
I'll have to bleep that. I guess
bleep the name.
But he was a couple years younger than us, and for some reason he just hated my guts. Like, there was one time that we were doing something and he just hurled a dodgeball. We were even playing dodgeball. He just hurled a dodgeball into my face and nearly broke my glasses. And I like went up to, and Harrison was, I think you were with me at this point. I went up and like tried to big up to him and like was like, "What are you doing? Like, why would you do that?" And he's like up in my face, like, "What are you doing about it? What are you doing about it?" Like this, like eighth grader. Who I'd never really interacted with before. But the first time I ever interacted with him...
I'm going to call CPS on your dad.
The first time I ever interacted with him, And we had classes. I think we might have had some classes together or something like that, but yeah. I never spoke to him ever. And we were in the, it was in a church. So we were in like the church sanctuary eating lunch because that was our cafeteria. And I walk up and he's sitting over in the corner by himself. And I walk up and I'm talking to this group of guys and he just out of nowhere goes, Spencer is a Nazi, specifically Hitler circa 1944. Said nothing else.
It was crazy.
Did he try to fight that Harrison kind of introduction? Why he tried to fight both of you?
Yeah, he just, he was.
Didn't you say he's small though? So he's like up to your nipples?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So you just punk kick him if you wanted to?
Yeah.
But like, I never interacted with this guy. Harrison, I don't think you ever interacted with this guy. He was just a fireball. Just. But that's such a specific thing to call somebody. Yeah. Is a Nazi, specifically Hitler circa 1944.
I love the circa. It really sells. Yeah. Like, you want to see Hitler, so we're going to meet me outside, buddy.
Cash me outside.
Really quickly, did I ever told you guys Caleb and I's talent show idea?
No.
That we never got to do?
No.
So Caleb, who's been on the show before in our Space Jam episode, which has a lot of views for some reason.
So it's called The Lonely Bowling Ball. And basically, I would stand on one side of the curtain, hidden away from view, and Caleb would stand on the other, and I would roll the bowling ball across the stage, and that was it. That was the whole show.
No way.
We wanted to do this so bad. But yeah, that's the whole story. I got nothing else for you. Nope.
What do you think the audience reaction would have been at your high school?
You know what it would have been? It would have been thing that happened when the guy for the talent show flipped the water bottle and that video went viral.
Yes.
What would have happened.
It would have been so it would have been middle school, actually. It would have been our last year of middle school because Caleb and I did not go to the same high school together.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But I think they would have loved it. I think it would have killed.
Now that we're just talking talent shows.
We've been the most popular guys in school.
I have one more talent show thing. Do you remember when the movie Pitch Perfect came out?
Great movie.
I was in sixth grade because I remember it was our sixth grade talent show.
The cup song? Somebody did the cup song?
There were 10 sets of girls in a row that all
one after
did
the other.
How
the
do
cup
you,
song.
As a talent show director, let that many people do that in a row? You're killing the ratings, dude.
It
okay?
was literally like one group of girls would leave do it after doing the cup song, and then another group of girls would come out and do the cup song.
Did they all do it equally well, or was there like a clear hierarchy?
I think it was all about the same, from what I remember. But it's just that's hilarious.
Did they sing
to me.
Too, or just
they sung? Yeah. They didn't do the cup part.
And then in between, there's the intermission. It's Harrison singing Hurt by Johnny Cash.
Even though he was homeschooled at the time, he shows up as a special cameo for our talent show.
Dressed in all black.
Don't do all black. That's not good.
No, the man in black. That's the Johnny Cash persona. Right?
Yeah, I know, but I was making a joke about it. Never mind.
Okay, anyways, Miyamoto Musashi. Have you ever heard that before?
Bless you.
Okay, I will say I'll open up this conversation by asking a question that my sixth graders keep asking me. Would you rather be a ninja, a pirate, or a samurai?
Ooh. I'm going to have to go ninja.
Wrong answer. Robbie?
I ain't getting scurvy.
I think, it's not pirate for me at all. It's between ninja and samurai.
I don't trust living on a boat, dude.
I think I'm going ninja too. I'm sorry. I know that's gonna ruin what you're about to say, but
I was actually gonna say my answer would be pirate. Completely going against this episode.
This guy's
topic.
Got a lifespan of 20 years.
I would be a pirate now. I think that would be fun.
Well, you can be a pirate now. All you have to do is sit down in a movie theater and put a camera out on a tripod. Right?
Right.
Yeah. I'm a pirate. No, I'm not. I'm not. Take that out. Maybe not a good idea to incriminate myself. I don't record movies. That's not me.
You'd have to be kind of stupid to try to do that, though. I mean, people do it,
no,
obviously.
No, somebody did it in Infinity
all
War.
The time.
My Infinity War showing. The dude in the seats in front of me, he came with the tripod and set it down right in front of the... He's in the middle of the theater. And nobody said a word. Not a single person.
Well, of course not. Who's going to say anything?
The people that work there?
Well, yeah.
I don't think movie theater employees actually care.
They don't get paid enough for that.
It's like they made the movie. They don't
They're
care.
All high schoolers. They're
the
like,
16-year-old work at the movie theater is probably like, oh, I wish I thought of that.
They're like, I get paid minimum wage. I don't get paid to care.
They probably paid them off to get away with it. But no, anyway, I derailed this again. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Ninja. So, the answer is ninja.
Well, yeah, I guess. Ninja are assassins without honor, though.
Yep.
Well, that perfectly describes me, so.
Samurai were bound by a strict code of honor.
Yeah, sounds too boring.
I guess.
Well, I guess, to hide in the shadows.
Have you ever seen The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise?
No.
We should throw that on the list. It's a really good movie. It is very funny to me
that the only samurai movie you have as reference is the one samurai movie where a white dude is the main star.
Yeah, shocker.
The one where the white guy becomes the best samurai of all time?
He doesn't become the best by any stretch.
Second best?
No.
He becomes 15th best in North America.
He becomes the last samurai. He's the last one to be trained before they're all
killed. So, but like on the AP poll, what are we talking here? Like the 18 to 20 range?
He's pretty mid for the most part.
Okay, so let's go with the crisp 23rd in Central Northern America.
Agreed.
The heavyweight champion of Nampa, Idaho.
No, but we should add that to the list. It's a really good movie.
So that's the difference there. Samurai were basically like servants. They're servants of like the government. Like they had to pledge their loyalty to certain government leaders and sort of act as their bodyguards or their soldiers, things like that. So I guess maybe ninja, you're doing the same thing. You're pledging your life to a government leader, but you just get to kill people in the dark, I guess. And like breathe through that tube, like the bamboo tube when you're hiding in the water. You can do that.
And you spit the stuff out of the, I forgot what you call those. The
blow darts.
The blow darts, yeah.
If you're a ninja and you whiff the shuriken shot to kill somebody, what do you do?
No, actually, you know, that's a great point because like there are plenty of times I've like missed a shot, like a clear shot in a video game, and now that you think about it, God, I'd be an awful ninja. Like, I mean, I would have the perfect opportunity to miss it, and I'd be like, hit something far right.
Like, you don't get like a lot of opportunities to pull off a hitman thing. You know?
No, you don't.
If you whiff the first shot, you just have to sit there and stare. Yeah. And you're just like,
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be a terrible ninja, dude. We would be terrible ninjas collectively.
Yeah, we would.
Somebody would like step on someone's foot or something, and then it'd be over with. Yeah.
Somebody burps while we're hiding in the bushes.
Think about that.
My stomach would be so loud, dude. Yeah, it would ruin it for everybody.
I bet I would forget to turn my ringer off before we do this. My phone starts blasting. But anyway, I don't know. This is the worst episode intro we've ever done.
No, it's not.
I guess you're right. I can't say
we have
the
to
worst.
Stop with the extremes, especially after what we just did.
We did before.
Nothing will ever be as bad as that.
But so Miyamoto Musashi is regarded as one of the best swordsmen of all time, and probably the most famous one to ever come out of Japan, like very legendary samurai. So this whole thing starts. He was born in 1584 in Miyamoto Village, but everything about his childhood is pretty obscure. Like, we don't really know where he came from or any of that, but we know he was born into a samurai family, and he probably grew up with his mother or his stepmother, and his dad was a man named Shinmen Munisai, who was like a very accomplished, like very famous samurai at the time. Not nearly as famous as his son would come to be, because we still talk about Miyamoto Musashi. But his dad would come visit, because obviously he's off being a samurai and serving in wars and all this stuff. But he would come home and visit and teach Miyamoto. I guess the way Japanese works is Musashi is his first name. The first name is the family name. He would teach Musashi about samurai stuff, you know, teach him how to use a sword and codes of honor, you know, Bushido and all that kind of stuff. But by the time he was around 10 years old, we don't know what happened, but he was an orphan. Like, his mom had died, and his father had either died or completely abandoned him. So he was living in a monastery where he learned Zen Buddhism. At age 13, though, he got in his first duel. Because this was obviously the part of culture when, or the time in history when people would just get in duels.
At the age of 13?
Yes. Not, I don't think that's normal, because the way this kind of goes down in the story, everybody doesn't really like that this happened. But, you know, people were just like, oh, you insulted me. Let's settle this to the death in the street right now.
Do we know who challenged who? Did he challenge the other guy?
He challenged. So in 1596, he was 13, and there was this guy named Arima Kihei who was traveling around to hone his art, like his swordsmanship skills. And he posted sort of like a public challenge, I guess like a bulletin board or something in the square in this town called
Hiro. He posted it on Reddit.
this town of
sword fight in the town square.
is this town of Hirofukumura. And he posts this public challenge, and Musashi comes by, he's like, sees the challenge, he's like, oh, and then signs his name underneath it. And a messenger came to Doran's temple, which is where Musashi was staying, to inform him that like his duel had been accepted by this Kihei guy. And his uncle was still around, but he was a priest in this temple, and his uncle was like really shocked. He goes to this Kihei samurai guy and he's like, hey, please don't let him do this. He's just a kid. He doesn't know what he's doing. And he tries to like cancel the duel, call it off, because his nephew is only 13. And Kihei was like, the only way my honor can be salvaged is if we do this public duel and he shows up and just apologizes to me. And that, so they were still going to like show up at the scheduled time. So when the time for the duel arrives, like when the scheduled time comes, Miyamoto or Musashi shows up, Kihei shows up, and his uncle was still standing at the side, like apologizing for Musashi. But instead of actually apologizing, his uncle had agreed to, Musashi just charges at Kihei. He's got a 6-foot quarter staff, and he charges straight at Kihei, shouting like a challenge at him, like he still wants to fight. And Kihei had a wakizashi, which is like a type of katana, like a long sword, and he goes in for the attack. But Musashi manages to throw Kihei on the floor, like dodges the sword attack, throws him to the ground as a 13-year-old. And Musashi managed to strike Kihei between the eyes and then beat him to death with this 6-foot quarterstaff at age 13.
Oh my gosh.
The big thing here that made Musashi so mad was that Kihei had treated him like a child. And so he's like, you know what, fine, and throws him to the ground and beats him to death with this quarterstaff. The funny thing about this is Kihei is said to have been arrogant, overly eager to battle, and a pretty bad swordsman. So that's his first victory. He was very famous later on for having 60 duels and for being undefeated. So he was in 60 duels over his lifetime, if not more, and had an undefeated record. So that was his first victory.
So he was the Floyd Mayweather of swordsmen.
So 3 years later, so he turns 16, and he leaves that monastery, and he fights another duel. His second duel, he won really easily. It's so easy that there was not even a story written out about it. He clapped some random guy. But soon after, so he's 16, he ends up wrapped in the Battle of Sekigakurai, which is like in 1600 against, there was like a revolt against the Shogun, and there were a bunch of the feudal lords who were battling for power. And he picks the wrong side. He picks the Ashigaka clan, and they lose. They get destroyed by the army of Ieyasu Tokugawa. And he fought, but despite being on the losing side, obviously, he fought really bravely, managed to, like, survive the battle, and there was he managed to survive a massacre of the Ashigaka troops that came after, or Ashikaga. So, survives being part of the losing battle, survives the massacre, and he's sort of, now he's, have you ever heard the word Ronin before? You know what a Ronin is?
I couldn't give you the definition.
Harrison, do you know what a Ronin is?
Is that like somebody who's kind of a rogue almost, like they're not necessarily, they don't like have specific loyalties.
Well, so they would pledge their lives to a specific leader in the government. If that leader were to die, they can't pledge to somebody else. So they end up, Ronin is a masterless samurai. So he's wandering around Japan at 16, having just fought in this losing battle, stuck without a master, sort of just wandering around, and he decides to go on a, they call it a war, it's a warrior pilgrimage called the Musha Shugyo. It's So he just like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to travel the country and just, I guess, kill a bunch of people. Who knows what this trip has in store. But during these years while he's on this Musha Shugyo, this warrior pilgrimage, he like hones his fighting skills and his philosophy in a series of duels, a lot of which were to the death. So from this point forward, so from 16 onward, he fought in 60 duels with a completely undefeated record, which is pretty crazy stats.
That's very impressive.
The first thing he does in 1604, so right after he begins this journey, he makes an enemy of one of the most notorious schools in Kyoto, like swordsmanship schools or samurai schools, which is the Yoshioka clan. So he fights three of these dudes and ends up just dismantling the whole school. So the first one, there's this dude named Seijiro Yoshioka. He fought this guy with a boken. So he used a wooden sword a lot of the time, but still was able to, he killed a lot of people with a wooden sword. So it didn't really stop him. But he fights this guy one-on-one with a boken. It was not meant to be to the death. So both warriors agreed beforehand that the winner would be whoever could get like a single blow on the other person with their boken, their wooden sword. And Musashi, in the middle of this duel, he makes that wooden sword. He makes the strike to win the duel. And with one strike with a wooden sword, breaks this other guy's arm. Like, completely breaks his arm. Absolutely nuts. And after this, the defeat was so bad that Seijiro retired from his position as head of the school and became a monk for Zen Buddhism.
Whoa.
So I guess he's 17 at this point. As a 17-year-old, he challenges the head of the top swordsmanship school in Kyoto, breaks his arm with a wooden sword, and humiliates him so bad that he becomes a monk.
Dang.
That was his first major duel after this pilgrimage. And then after that, the brother of this Seijiro guy shows up. His name is Den Shichiro Yoshioka. And he became the head of the family after the other guy sort of retired and left. And he challenged Musashi to regain the family honor. Because, you know, that's what they did. You know, honor was the most important thing. And this time it was supposed to be for the death. And here's what is really hilarious about Miyamoto Musashi. So not only was he a really incredible swordsman, his strategy was to sort of set his opponents off balance however he could. His favorite thing to do would be to show up really, really late for whatever scheduled duel was going on to sort of set the opponent off balance. So he shows up like a couple hours late. Oh man, sorry, I overslept, I guess. And Denshichiro guy gets so
Ben Shapiro.
Ben Shapiro gets so pissed that Musashi showed up late to the duel that he can't think clearly, and Musashi wins the fight easily. He kills him with a single blow to the head because this guy's so mad and he's not thinking clearly at all. So he's taken out two of these head guys already, and now the third guy was a. Man, it was the 12-year-old little brother. He's gotten rid of the other two guys. So now all that's left is the 12-year-old little brother, Matashichiro. So he's like, you brought dishonor to my family. You've taken down my two big brothers. This is it. I'm taking you down. So this is crazy. I feel like I'm doing all the talking here too.
Well,
I'm
just this is your story.
This is really interesting.
What he does, or the time of the duel was set for like nighttime. Not really normal. I guess all the other duels he's done so far have been like in the daytime. But this one was set for nighttime. And he's like, this feels a little bit weird. I don't trust this. So he shows up to the duel early for once. Good for him. And hides in the bushes to like make sure that, hey, no, like that this is going to be a one-on-one thing. It turns out that this 12-year-old kid brought like a whole army of Yoshioka dudes to come out and just kill Musashi. they've got swords, they got bows, and some of them even have rifles, because I guess this was at the point in time when Japan had been trading a little bit and they had rifles. So this whole army shows up, and they were supposed to ambush Musashi while Matashichiro, the 12-year-old kid, was going to be the bait. So he sits there and waits in the bushes for the time to be right, so just buying his time. And he jumps out of the bushes, charges forward, cuts the kid's head clean off. And then he's still surrounded by this entire army of dudes who serve the head of the Yoshioka school. So what he does, this is a very important moment for him. He draws a second sword. So he's got two swords, and he just starts cutting a path through this entire army of dudes. So, and managed to kill basically all of them before escaping into a rice field nearby. As a 17-year-old.
This 17-year-old's like John Wick. That's crazy.
It doesn't seem real. I mean, I believe it, but it's like that's some straight out of a movie.
Yeah, so this moment was very important. So many historians believe that this was the first time that he'd ever thought about fighting with two swords, which was like his trademark. So he was the guy who sort of pioneered using two swords at once. Yeah. Before that, it was very slow, you know, single sword combat, but he was sort of chaotic, a lot more of a mishmash, you know.
He liked to live on the edge.
Yeah, living on the edge. Yeah. Kind of guy. Like, he wasn't, like, he was concerned about honor, but it wasn't like the, he managed to humiliate a lot of people and catch people off balance by being sort of untraditional.
Yeah. Was he disrespectful after he killed people? Was it like a...
I don't know if... there's no reports on whether he teabagged people after he killed
them. I was going to ask, is he a teabagger? Because he sounds like a teabagger.
So,
that was an evil laugh. What was that? Are we going to ignore that?
Yeah, I'm just going to move on. I don't know how to react to that.
Creepy.
I don't usually sit like this when I laugh.
He's like hunched over.
So even you're acknowledging it was strange? Are you being possessed?
As soon as I heard it, I was like, that's weird.
You hear my stomach?
Put the mic up to it. I hear it. I don't know if it's going to come up with the mic.
I'm going to wait till it starts again, because it will. It will start again.
Yeah, so he's on this pilgrimage for a very long time. 7 years later, so in 1611, he's practicing Zen Buddhism at a temple it's the Myo Shinji Temple, where he met this guy named... Nagaoka Sato, who was a vassal to like a very important lord. So he's talking with this guy, and nobody knows when the duel was or why the duel was sort of scheduled. At this point, Musashi is 30 years old, but nobody knows why the duel started. Some people say it was because the Nagaoka guy proposed it. Or like out of a rivalry or jealousy for Musashi. Some people say it was politically motivated because, you know, this guy, the Tadaoki guy who was there's so many names here. The guy he dueled, Nagaoka, right? Served this guy named Tadaoki, and Tadaoki was like brand new at his job, and they wanted him, or he wanted to sort of consolidate power by having his guy kill, you know, this very famous, powerful swordsman. So he's like, we'll just knock this guy off, I guess. The duel was scheduled for April 13th, 1612. So Musashi was, again, 30 years old at this point. He's no longer a kid. He's been doing this for a very long time. The departure by boat for the duel. So they were going to take the boat at the same time to this location. It was arranged for the hour of the dragon in the early morning. So about 8 o'clock in the morning. This island of Ganryujima, which is like between Honshu and Kyushu. So just sort of a little island between two major areas of Japan. And the officials of the city banned any spectators. I guess because they didn't, in case the guy lost. But they banned spectators, but a bunch of people showed up on the island anyway. And this Kojiro guy that he was fighting was well known for wielding something called a nodachi, which everyone called a laundry drying pole because it was huge. Let me see. I think it was over 3 feet long.
Just a stick?
A sword.
Oh, okay.
So it was sword that was over 3 feet long.
Okay.
A pretty long sword.
That's a big sword.
Yeah. A small child. Medium-sized child.
It looks... Oh, I
small, small child. I don't know. One of the childs.
I actually misread that. He had two of them. So he had two 3 foot long swords.
So he had 6 feet in swords combined.
So he was famous for a swift two-stroke sword technique called the Tsubame Geishi, which was he bore the nickname the Demon of the Western Promises. So this is a very scary dude. It's not like the first guy he fought who was just kind of an idiot. This guy was a legitimate threat. Like really, really scary, really good at what he did. So Kojiro, the guy he's fighting, shows up at the right time. But Musashi overslept and showed up like 3 hours late to this duel. There's spectators here waiting too. So he just overslept. He's like, oh crap, I got that duel today. So he goes.
I forgot to set my alarm.
And it's not like he just run to the center of the city. He had to take a boat to get there. So he wakes up 3 hours late and takes the boat over to this island. And while he's on, or I guess Musashi, not only, he woke up 3 hours late and then it says he ate a full breakfast. So he's like, I don't really care.
Three bowls of Cheerios.
He's like, I'm not going to do a fight on an empty stomach, dude. What do you think I'm doing? So he wakes up 3 hours late and then eats a full breakfast. And then he's still got to take the boat over there. Some versions of this story, Musashi is intentionally arriving late as a sign of disrespect, but I like the version where he oversleeps better because that's funnier. So he's sailing over the river to get to this island. And while he's doing it, I guess he realizes he forgot his sword at home or he just didn't care, like he wanted something different. So what he does is he takes one of the ship's oars and carves it with his knife into something that's sort of like a sword, something vaguely sword-shaped. So he's got the oar of this boat.
So he's showing up with a stick to a sword fight.
He's got he's bringing an oar to a sword fight. I love this guy so much. So this is possibly even to wake himself up. So he's like, oh man, I'm still feeling a little bit sleepy. Let me just make a sword out of this oar real quick. just a little wake me up. So he makes the sword out of the oar. He shows up, and right off the bat, the second he's like hit land and made it the duel location, this Kojiro guy is so pissed that he's late. He starts making fun of his lateness, and he dramatically throws the sheath for his sword into the sea, to make a point or something. And Musashi responded taunting back. He's like, "Oh, you're clearly not confident if you think you're never going to get a chance to use that a fine sheath like that again." So he's like, he's making fun of this guy back.
This is rock level trash talk right here.
They start circling each other. So now the duel's really on. Musashi with his oar that he's sharpened a little bit with his pocket knife. And then this Kojiro guy with two 3 foot long swords. They're circling each other. And Kojiro leaps forward, and his trademark move was an overhead strike with both his swords. So he takes both his swords and just strikes down towards Musashi's head. And Musashi jumps and swings at the same time. So they're jumping towards each other, swinging at the exact same time. So Kojiro's sword strike, somehow it connects with Musashi's head, but only cuts his headband. Does not cut his head at all. Perfectly unharmed. Musashi's strike cut Kojiro's skull in two.
What?
So just gets him right in the skull. So this other guy only manages to cut Musashi's headband off, and he just cuts it right into this guy's skull with his oar that he's vaguely sharpened. So that's I think the most famous of his duels, for good reason, because
yeah,
that's insane.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't imagine an oar being a weapon in any way, shape, or form. So to imagine it not only being able to like exist in that capacity, but to also split someone's skull in two, it's pretty
like
safe.
John Wick showing up with a pencil.
Miyamoto Musashi is the dude who didn't do any work for the entire time you're doing the group project, or like that.
He's just naturally gifted, but he shows up
at the end and somehow manages to make it work
because he's just naturally gifted. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's just like, oh man. What I love about that too is that he doesn't use the sword. He's like, I kind of like this oar actually.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, I'm just gonna use the oar. Why not? And just use. It's a fight to the death with one of the most famous and scary swordsmen in Japan. He's like, the oar will do fine.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Wow.
I love this guy so much. So in 1614, so that was how long? 3 years after this duel with Kojiro, he's at war again. And he sides against the same shogun again, Ieyasu Tokugawa, and picks the losing side again. Because this guy, again,
he just can't catch a break.
His way through. So he sides in favor of a guy named Toyotomi Hideyoshi. Both winter and summer battles were fought at Osaka, and he managed to be on the losing side again. But some people believe there's some reports that he actually switched sides to the losing side before the end of it. But after this, I guess you can only be on the losing side of a war against the guy in power twice. I don't know how he managed to get away with that once, because it was the same guy. Uh-huh. But after this, he decides to, like, he's like, you know what? I'm going to take some time off. I'm going to teach my sword style for a little bit. Because, again, he sort of pioneered that two-sword style. So he spent a while just sort of being a teacher. He did that for about, I guess, 6 years or so. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to take another warrior pilgrimage. I'm going to go on another
Mushishin. I crave violence.
He's like, I haven't killed somebody in a while. I got to fix that. But this time, it's not... He wasn't going to just fight. Like, when he was a kid, he went out because, one, he had nothing better to do, and two, because he wanted to fight. And this time, it was more like sort of test where he was at with his ability and sort of develop his skills, develop his style a little bit more. This time, he did partake in a bunch of duels, and he won all of them. No, none of them were to the death. So, it was all wooden sword duels like before. I mean, that didn't stop him. He did kill that guy with that wooden sword and with that oar. But, you know, I guess he held back because none of them were to the death. So by 1640, so another 20 years later, he became, he was no longer a Ronin, decides to sign on, maybe there's like a samurai draft. I don't know how it worked. but he signs on for the Lord of Kumamoto, this guy named Hosokawa Tadatoshi. And this lord is like, hey man, why don't you write a book? So as he writes the 35 Instructions on Strategy, that was his first book. And then 2 or 3 years later, he became sick and he started sensing like he was about to die. We think he died of thoracic cancer. We're not really sure, obviously, because you know, this was the 1600s. Not like they kept records of all this stuff at the time.
Could be dysentery.
Could have been a common cold. You
could have been gonorrhea.
Syphilis, I don't know. Pepositis, the C.
HIV.
But, so he,
the
2 or 3 years
swine
later.
Swine flu.
COVID-19.
I was
going to
say coronavirus, COVID-19. Yeah.
Or I guess it was the 1500s.
COVID-1.
COVID-1. COVID-0. Patient 0.
So two or three years after he signs on with this Tadatoshi guy, he sort of sensed that he was about to die, and he goes to a cave where he writes the masterpiece. Have you ever heard of the Book of Five Rings?
I have heard of that.
Sounds familiar.
Yes, yeah. It's a very famous like sort of war strategy philosophy book.
Huh.
So he retires to a cave and writes this Book of Five Rings. And he also wrote another book while he was in the cave called The Way of Walking Alone, about sort of self-discipline.
Huh.
And he completed those books in 1645, which is just months before he died. So at the moment of his death, he had himself raised up like to his knees. He had his belt tightened and he had his sword, his wakizashi, put sort of in his belt. And he seated himself with like one knee raised up. Oh, I accidentally just closed out of that. He seated himself like one knee like raised up, and he had his sword in his left hand and his cane in the right. Don't really know why that was the most dramatic position he could think of to die in. And he died in that posture at 62 years old. And there was like a big funeral. They set up a tomb on Mount Iwato on the order of the Lord. So the Lord that he served, not the Lord Jesus Christ.
Thanks for clarifying.
I just said the Lord and moved on.
Is that where Mormonism started?
I don't think so. So he managed to write all these books, and these books are still used today as like works of military strategy or for martial arts, very important works in that whole sphere. But in Japan, he became known as something called a Kensai, which is a sword saint, and many people see him as the greatest swordsman to like ever live. And this is debatable, but even beyond all that, the works, like the books that he wrote, still live on as very important, very famous, especially in Japanese circles. Very important book. That's Miyamoto Musashi.
That's interesting. Wow. It's a very interesting story. I'd never heard any of that, so.
Is the sword guy from One Piece based on him?
Zoro? Probably Zoro? Indirectly, okay. But not, I guess not technically. Well, I guess because he uses three swords.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just a very, it's very interesting as a contrast piece, because you think about, you know, and I think, like, if you look historically, the American military, this is one of the reasons why we won the revolution, because we were willing to fight dirty,
Yep.
And not just like stand in a straight line and be shot at. And the British didn't want to move on from that.
Yeah. Like, oi, that's not fair. We but don't do that.
But he's not just
stupid on a Tuesday too.
You've got a shooting time with the drums.
You've got to have the man playing the piccolo.
You gotta shoot in time with the drums.
They're dirty, I tell you, dirty.
Can you imagine, like, your dad, like, you have a family member.
Where's
like, oh,
your red coat?
Like, it's like your dad was like a veteran. But
I don't
not,
have to imagine that.
No, but like, but not for like real war, for being like the dude that played the trumpet or something as people were walking into war.
My dad played the war trumpet.
The war trumpet.
Or like played the flute, you know, like the guy they had playing the flute. It's like, my dad was the flautist for the British military.
If they could have figured out how to fire projectiles out of their flutes and stuff back then, oh man, you catch so many people by surprise.
The guy who invented the saxophone intended for it to be used on
the battlefield?
On the battlefield,
really?
In war.
I actually have that down as a possible episode topic in the future.
Oh, it's a good one.
You know, the guy that invented the claymore, he also intended it to be used in war. RPG 2. Just a little known fun fact.
Well, a little known fun fact. So the guy who the Nobel Prize is named after, Alfred Nobel, invented dynamite as a tool that's supposed to be used for construction.
Dynamite.
And sure. Then it just, well, and then he sure. Was like, oh wait, people are using this to kill each other. And
profit.
Well, so his obituary got published on accident. And he said, like, before he died.
Oh, okay.
Like, it got, so, like, I guess word got sent out that
it got leaked online.
Word that he had died got spread around, and the newspaper's like, oh, crap, we got to publish an obituary for Alfred Nobel. And he's sitting
it's
there.
It's like Mandela all
reading,
over again, dude.
He's reading his obituary, and they're talking about he's, like, the merchant of death, and this guy who was responsible for so much bloodshed. And because of that, that was why he started the Nobel Prize, to, like, promote peace. And change his legacy. I just don't know how you'd be inventing dynamite and be like, I wonder if people can kill other people with this. Like, what would happen hypothetically if somebody, like, I don't know, had dynamite thrown at them? Like, what do you think would happen? Like, he didn't consider that once?
Yeah, like, when he was inventing this, he just got lucky enough, like, he stood just far enough away from the dynamite each time that it didn't affect him, so he had it in his head that it couldn't affect anybody. And then somebody got their head blown off, and he was like, just a side effect.
did not expect this. This really came out of left field.
This is a glitch. It's not a feature.
This is the one thing we did not want to happen. The newest update should patch it.
But the guy who invented the forklift felt the same way.
What have we done?
Why are they using it for war?
Killdozer.
Forgot about that. It's a nice callback.
What, me just saying the word killdozer under my breath?
Yes.
Is that what a callback is?
It wasn't killdozer. Under your breath, though. Good callback. It was, no. It was, you said it pretty loud. That was there was no whisper there.
But anyway, that's about the end. That's all I have
on thanks for sharing your story.
These episodes like this, where I have a long thing to say, I always
you
feel
weird.
You said
that as though it was Spencer's personal story.
This is my fan, my historical fiction.
Well, like, we're in an AA meeting. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing your story.
You're
we
not
appreciate
alone.
Your
We've
openness.
All been there.
We've all been there.
We've all overslept for a duel and then had to make
showed
a sword
up with
out
an
of
oar.
An oar.
And Jimmy sitting next to us is like, I overdosed on heroin last week.
Hi, Jimmy.
I eat opium.
Hi, my name is Miyamoto Musashi.
What are you here for? 3 DUIs.
It has been approximately 6 weeks since I killed somebody with the oar of a boat.
What is your weapon of choice? A vehicle?
But anyway, thank you all so much for listening. I know we don't do an outro anymore, but what's our email address?
thepodcastmen@gmail.com.
What's our website, Robbie?
Is it Is it sorry? It's not sorrywetried.com.
It is.
It's sorrywetried.com. There we go.
Our merch page is bit.ly/swtmerch. I think maybe I should make some Neon Worms merch.
That'd be fun.
Just for us.
Yeah.
The life that could have been.
We can make it happen now.
Now that I don't play music anymore?
Yeah.
Now that we also don't know many people who are also still in the music space.
You can't unlearn Wonderwall.
I never learned Wonderwall, actually.
It's not that hard.
I've never even listened to Wonderwall, honestly.
That's a lie.
We're doing that after this.
No, okay. I'm not listening to Wonderwall. I'll hide myself in the bathroom.
I'll start blaring Wonderwall as we end. What else is there to plug? Our Instagram is at SWT Podcast. I'm Spitzer.
I'm Harrison.
Plan for this. We didn't do this last time.
No, because we knew we weren't going to keep
it. Oh, man. I'm in peril. I can't think.
I am the sharpened oar of a boat.
I am no longer good at my job. Let's wrap this up.
Stay fresh, D-backs.
I'm actually really disappointed in myself right now. I couldn't think of one.
These weren't just innocent bystanders. These were enemies who felt the wrath of God's backhand. When tough love must get even tougher, God's backhand. When evil plays rough, God can play rougher.